October 4th, 1986, Chickahominy Fall Festival, held in Charles City County, Virginia.
We're going to get started with some of our preliminaries. First off, I have some announcements to make. Any of you who haven't gotten a program booklet may purchase those at the first booth on the corner immediately behind you. Also, there's a painting there located at that same booth that will be raffled off toward the end of the program. That should come about 3 o'clock. And the raffle tickets on that are $1. Those of you who missed the program last year, we have a few of those left, and they have some information in them that won't be in this year's program. And they are available for $3 each if anyone would like one of those. Also at that same booth, the Indian Education Fund, which is made up of the Virginia tribes, and out of that fund, a number of the Indian students attend the institutions of higher learning through loans. Donations for that fund are being accepted at the information booth also. Last year, when Helen Roundtree spoke, she said that she had never seen it rain on one of our festivals. When she said that, I really cringed. I said, we're in for it next year. But luckily, it looks like we have another beautiful day. And we can all be thankful that maybe it could be a little bit cooler, but at this point, possibly we shouldn't be too choosy. Although Helen never saw it rain on some of the festivals, all of us who have participated in them from the very beginning, we had a few times that we couldn't call on the spirit to hold off just a little bit longer. We have done some indoors, but at that time it was a little bit smaller gathering. We had a little smaller program, and we were able to crowd inside. But if it happens again, we're just going to stand in the rain and let it go. I'm sure everyone is well aware that for any kind of function such as this, the people behind the scenes is the ones who make it go. And I mean to tell you, it's been a lot of work going on here, especially in the last few days, but work that began months ago, the planning, the work on the crafts that you see at a number of the booths. The work on this program that you have a copy of. And toward the back of the program book, you'll see some of the persons listed who have participated in putting this festival together. This being our the 35th time that we have done it, sometimes it may seem that it should all go smoothly, but each year there's something different. And we try to make a few changes. We try to make it a little better. We try to make it a little bigger. One of these days, who knows, we may be doing it for a week at a time, and then it'll really require some work. Well, we held off the rain. If we could get down on the wind just a little bit, we may not lose our craft booths before the day is out. The wind is about to take them away. The persons in charge of getting together the tribal arts and crafts, I certainly want to thank Ms. Eloise Jones, Mamie Whitehead, and Ms. Zelma Wynn. And all of those persons, it was probably 10 or 15 other persons who worked with those, and I don't even have those names. The chairperson for organizing the booth spaces, Ms. Mayflower Atkins. Food sales chairman, Betty Jackson, and she has been assisted by must be at least 25 to 30 people. I came up this morning shortly after 6, and they were here working at that time. When I left last night, late into the night, they were still working. The tribe also participates in a Title IV Indian education program, and the parent committee for that program organizes the Miss Chickahominy contest each year. So we want to thank the parent committee for that portion of the program. Publicity, Josephine Morris, and program chairman who put together this lovely book, Miss Bertie Sowers. Then we can go on down. Those persons who just worked with the program, to name a few: Mayflower Atkins, Betty Jackson, Sally Atkins, Josephine Morris, Mamie Whitehead, Roland Childress, Dolly Atkins, Martha Atkins, Stephen Atkins, Bertie Sowers. Those people who contributed photos and scrounged around through their back rooms and pulled out some of the older ones was Don Atkins, Reba Wynn, Rosalie Atkins, Chief Lone Wolf, Michael Holmes, Maurice Atkins, Mayflower Atkins, Madge Atkins, Rudolph Atkins, and Chief Lone Eagle. I wish I could remember all of those persons who have contributed, but the persons who put up the booths this morning and last night, Merle Holmes, Biff, and we also had Wayne Atkins, had Keith Wynn, had Jimmy Stewart, Leonard Atkins, and a host of others. As the day goes on, we may get a list of those who have been working in the food area, and that'll probably take about 30 minutes to go through that list. Also on your program booklet, you should see a number in the corner there. And from time to time today, we will be pulling a number, and we will have an article, a handmade article, that will be given to the person who has the program book corresponding to that number. Okay, and we'll do the first one now. First article will be this handmade choker, and we're going to ask Nakoma Sowers to draw a number. Okay, let me shake this up. Number 549. Does anyone have number 549? Okay. I think that may be a little bit beyond the sales area now. Let me hold this one. We'll get another one. Okay. Someone has this number. Number 12.
No.
Number 12. Is that person here? Now, on these, you do have to be present to win. Okay, number 12. Going once, going twice. Okay. Number 297. We have some booklets out there. Folks who wander around here probably don't hear the mic. Number 297. Okay. Number 277. We're going to keep going here. Thomasina Jordan, from the Mashpee Penobscot tribe, and she is going to come up and tell you some lovely Indian legends, some Virginia legends, and she knows a bunch. Also, many of the legends that she's going to be telling you today are also recorded on record. And that is available at the United Indians of America booth located to my right there.
Thank you very much, Michael. This isn't working now.
Let me get this one down. Okay.
Let me get this one with this.
How's that?
1, 2. Okay. Michael, thank you very much for having me here. I hope you're all warm enough. I hope you'll also pardon the sunglasses. I'm not trying to project the image of a cool Indian, but one who can't stand the sun. Long before the West was won, there was an East. And in 1607, it was to Jamestown, Virginia, that the first settlers came, not out in Arizona. And the story that I would like to tell you first is about the settlers and the Indian people of the Powhatan Confederacy and the first conversations. This is according to legend. This is the way my grandfather told it to me. When the very first settlers came to Jamestown, they were very, very concerned about the habits of the Indian people and the way the Indian people ate, the way they dressed. But they didn't know how to go about telling them they wanted them to change immediately. And the missionary, the chief missionary, and we won't mention any denomination because we're not sure, said the best thing that we can do for the Indian people is to have a debate. We'll do the debate in sign language because neither one of us understand each other. And whoever wins the debate at the end of 3 rounds, they can practice things pretty much the way they want. And the chief missionary spoke to the Indian chief, and he said this was fine with him. But they would have the debate outside, and they would have it on a warm day, perhaps 1 moon from now. And the missionary agreed, the chiefs agreed, and the day came. And they took a huge oak table, and all of the settlers are sitting where you are, and all the Indians were on this side of the table. And on the first day of the debate, the chief missionary stood up, and he went like this. And the chief looked at him, and he went like this. The missionary said, that's it. The Indians win the first round of the debate. Now, remember, my friends, this is all in the interpretation. On the second day of the debate, the chief missionary stood up and he held up 3 fingers like this. The Indian chief looked at him and he really put 1 finger forward like this. The missionary said, that's it. The Indians win the second round of the debate. On the third day, the missionaries brought forth everything for Holy Communion and put it out. The Indian chief looked at him, walked over to a nearby apple tree, took an apple off of the tree, took a bite of it, and threw it away. The missionary said, that's it. There's no question. The Indians win the debate. Now, the settlers were a little bit angry about this. So they said to him, how did you let the Indians win? He said, all I can tell you is this. On the first day of the debate, he looked at me and I said, God is everywhere. And he said, there's only one God. On the second day of the debate, I said, God is a Trinity and can go every place. And he said again, there's only one God and he's here right now. On the third day, I brought forth everything for Holy Communion, and he looked at me, went over to the apple tree, took a bite of this apple, and reminded us of our original sin, and threw away the apple. The settlers were very satisfied with this. In the meantime, the Indian chief went back to the village, and all the Indian people said, "How did the white man let us win this debate?" He said, "I don't know. All I know is on the first day of the debate, the man got up and he said, all the Indians will leave the land. And I said to him, not one Indian. On the second day, he said, you've got 3 days to get out. And I said to him, not one day. And on the third day, they brought forth all of this food that I never saw before. And I didn't have any lunch. So I took a bite of the apple. It was sour. And I threw it away. And they all started to applaud. So that's how we won the debate. So you see, my friends, it's all in the interpretation. Legends vary from tribe to tribe. The legends of Virginia were part of the Algonquian nation. And because I see some children in the audience, I would like to tell you one that was told to me when I was a very little girl. And I lost my parents when I was quite young, and I grew up with my grandparents. And I'd like to tell you this story, okay? Long time ago, so long ago there isn't anyone alive that can remember, the Great Spirit came to earth. And he looked at his Indian people, and he was pleased with what he saw. But in order to protect them from any problems, he sent his helper, who was known as the Great Changer. The Great Changer was 12 feet high. He was a giant. And when he came in his white stone canoe down to earth, he conquered all the goblins and all of the demons and even the wicked sorcerer who was known as Pomola of the Night. And when the Great Changer had done all of these things, he sat back and said, "There isn't anything that I can't conquer. Not anything." "Not so," said a Chickahominy Indian woman standing by. "There is one who sits in my lodge behind the deerskin that you can never conquer." Now, I know you're a very powerful one, and I know that if you wanted to, you could look behind the deerskin and see who is there. But if you promise me that you will not look, I will take you to him. And the Great Changer thought for a moment, and then he agreed. "By the way," the woman said, "when you get to my lodge, which you will be taller than the lodge, his name is Warsis." When the Great Changer came to the lodge, he said in a loud voice, "Warsis, come to me." But Warsis stayed behind the deerskin, hanging on to a good luck charm that was carved in his hand. And again the Great Changer called, "Warsis, come to me." Then Warsis stayed there and hung on to the good luck charm in his hand. Now this time the Great Changer was really angry. He was not used to having anybody disobey him. But he had given the woman his word that he would not look. And so he said again, "Warsis, come to me." But Warsis didn't pay any attention. By this time, the Great Changer looked at the woman and said, "What type of Indian is he? Is he a Huron? Is he an Onondaga? Is he a Chickahominy? Is he a Lumbee? Tell me." The woman said, "He is called Warsis." Again, the Great Changer called, and again, Warsis didn't obey him. This time, the Great Changer ran to the river, threw himself in the river, and the river ran dry with his anger. And when he came out, he called again, "Warsis, come to me." And lo and behold, from behind the deerskin came Warsis, still hanging on to the good luck charm. And he looked up at this giant who was 12 feet high. And the giant looked down at him and he said, "Speak to me." And Narcisse looked back and said, "Go." "Go," said the great changer. "I have heard many tribal speeches before, but never go." And again, Narcisse looked up at him and said, "Go." "And do you know, my friends, that Indian people along the coast still call their babies Narcisse in honor of that baby, and babies all over the world say go as their very first word in honor of the baby who wasn't afraid of anything." And that's one of the stories from Virginia. Indian people used animals and birds as teachers. They became an intricate part of the culture and of the history of Indian people. I don't know many children that would not rather have a larger-than-life rabbit or a bird that talked to teach them than maybe you or I coming in and saying, "Don't do that." But the legends were also meant for lessons. This legend that I'm about to tell you is about the hermit thrush. And it does teach a lesson, it does have a moral, but I think it's one of the most beautiful stories I've ever heard, and I'd like to share it with you. Long time ago, when animals could talk like people, and people could communicate with the animals and the birds, the Great Spirit came to Earth. And as he walked along the way, he thought everything was beautiful, but something was missing. And as the Great Spirit walked, all of the little birds of the air followed him. And wherever they walked, the Great Spirit looked, and suddenly he realized when he heard the beating of an Indian drum and the singing of the ancient sunset song, what was missing. "What is missing," he said, "is the birds have no song." So he gathered all of the birds of the air together at a great council rock, and he said to them, "Would you like to sing as do my Indian people?" And all of the birds became excited and said, "Oh yes," because they couldn't sing yet. And so they said, "They'd love to do this." And the Great Spirit was happy. And he said to them, "You shall have a song, but you must earn it. There is nothing gained that comes easily. Whoever flies the highest and flies the farthest, tomorrow, before the moon meets the sun, shall have the finest song of all." And all the birds were very excited. They couldn't wait for the night to pass. And at the appointed hour, they went again to listen to the Great Spirit's command. All the birds gathered, and in those days the eagle, as he still is, was the mightiest of all the birds. And he sat down at the council rock and said, "I am sure to win. There is none, not any feathered creature of the sky, that is stronger, that is braver, or that can fly farther than I." And next to the eagle sat the little thrush, and he was huddled in the corner. And he thought, "I am so small and so insignificant, I'll never be able to fly." And as all the birds were looking at the mighty eagle, an idea came to the little thrush. And he flew under the wing of the eagle and planted himself there. And when all the birds were given the command to take off, the little thrush went skyland under the wing of the eagle. Now some of the smaller birds, like the sparrows and the starlings, they fell to earth very quickly, and they only learned a few notes, but they were happy because it was more song than they ever had before. And at the end of the day, before the moon came to meet the sun, there was only one left in the heavens, and that was the mighty eagle. And even he began to tire. And as he began to soar downward, lo and behold, miracle of miracles, from under his wing came the little thrush. and the eagle scowled, but he was too tired to raise enough beats to pursue the thrush. And the little thrush flew up to Skyland through a break in the clouds and into the world of the spirits. And there he learned the most beautiful song of all. And the time came for the little thrush to return to earth. And as he began to soar downward, the little thrush began to cry. He knew he had cheated. Were it not for the mighty eagle, he would never have been able to get to Skyland to sing. And the little thrush felt guilty. And the closer he got to the council rock, and he saw other birds, he knew they knew he had cheated too. And the little thrush was frightened, but he was also sad because of what he had done. And he began to sing the magical song. And even the mighty eagle stopped to listen. But that did not satisfy the little thrush, who knew he had done wrong. So he decided to impose a punishment upon himself. He would fly to the thickest part of the forest, and there he would not be seen by anyone, and he wouldn't have to see anyone. But sometimes, on a quiet twilight, if you listen, you hear him sing the wonderful song that he learned in Skyland, and he's known today as the Hermit Thrush. Thank you very much for sharing some of these legends with me this afternoon. I hope that we'll be able to share some others with you a little later. Thank you very, very much.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, you can relax for just a few minutes. We will be having a parade will be coming your way very shortly. And parade, you will first see the parade along the highway in this area. It will proceed up to the corner and come back behind the audience here and up to this area. So everyone will get a good chance to take a look at the parade. Ladies and gentlemen, we will have the invocation, Lord's Prayer, sung by Red Wing Atkins, and in sign language by Chief Juanito.
35th Fall Festival began in 1952. In your program book, you will find some background that has led us up to this day. Throughout this century, we have been a part of the Chickahominy tribe. Our priority has always been education. And the first Fall Festival was held 1 year after the building of a modern elementary and high school for Indian students for the first time in the state of Virginia. We started that in 52, and it has evolved to its present day size. During that period, we were led by Chief Oliver Lone Eagle Atkins, who was elected chief in 1940. Chief Lone Eagle served as chief of the Chickahominy tribe from 1940 until June of this year, at which time he retired, handing over the reins to a succeeding chief who had previously served as assistant chief. We honored him for all those years of service by electing him chief emeritus all time. At this time, to introduce our present reigning chief, I give to you Chief Lone Eagle Atkins, Chief Emeritus.
Chief Lone Eagle has worked valiantly to promote and perpetuate the identity of the Chickahominy Indians, of the Chickahominy Indians. Now, therefore, be it resolved by the Chickahominy Tribe of Indians that Chief Lone Eagle, as Chief Emeritus of the Chickahominy Tribe of Indians, will forever remain a symbol of courage, honor, leadership, and goodwill to his people, the Chickahominy Indians. Chief Lone Eagle. And all the friends that I've met over the years. I'm glad to have you here today, and I hope that this will be a joyous occasion for you. Thank you.
Nine. the Nansemond, and now we'll give him an opportunity to bring greetings to you from the Nansemond tribe. On behalf of Chief Earl Bass and the Nansemond tribe, I wish to thank Chief Atkins and the Chickahominy tribe for the invitation to participate in the 35th Chickahominy Fall Festival. The Nansemond tribe is the only tribe of the Old Powhatan Confederacy that is located on the southern side of the James River. The important and key element of gatherings of this kind is that it demonstrates the need and the desire for a renewal of the old Indian extended family feeling that existed among all the Indian tribes in the past. That feeling and attitude is essential if we are to preserve what is left of the old Indian culture in this area, relearn the arts and crafts, and capture the pride of a race and a culture that most people thought was extinct. Thank you very much. I would like to thank the Chickahominies for including the Pamunkey Indians, inviting us to their festival. I wish we were located for a quick to return the invitation, but we're a much smaller tribe, and we appreciate your including us in your festivities. Thank you.
If you're following your problem, there are a few things we jumped the gun on. One is waiting for the women of the world and special honors that came ahead of schedule. And on your problem is introduction of the guest speaker. Sarah Patton, director of Daytime Festival Park. She's not with us today, but instead we have Dr. Helen Roundtree from Indian University who will introduce the speaker.
$3 million, which became available July the 1st, thanks to the initiative of Delegate Hardaway Marks of this district and Senator Elmo Cross, also of this district, Governor Todd and Governor Morales, have also been very instrumental in helping us get this kind of funding for a very important program. We're optimistic that we can get an additional $1 million next year from the legislature, and that we can obtain private gifts of one kind or another for another $1 million. Museums are not inexpensive.
We're about to run out of tape.
Our architect, Carl Abbott, expects that his detailed construction plans should be ready in time to begin building next March. In 9 days, we will begin work on the interior design and the layouts of the exhibits with a Northern Virginia firm, Design and Production Incorporated, whose most recent project has been the new Jimmy Carter Library and Museum in Plains, Georgia, which opened only on Wednesday. You can imagine how excited we are at Jamestown over this extremely important change in our program. It's one that Chief Atkins and I discussed over when I first met him in 1981, having joined the Jamestown Yorktown Foundation, and met one of our oldest employees, Chief Lone Eagle, in the replication we then had of the Powhatan Lodge. The Chief and I talked at length about how to do much more than we were doing at that time to project the culture that you all share and that is in danger of being lost unless the state of Virginia and the foundation do more than we have done in the past. Chief had some very good ideas, as he always does, and one evolution of that has been the creation